This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Beyond the Ballot Box with me, Dasharan Johan. While many experts predicted that Pakatan Harapan would lose in the Melaka state elections for various factors, most expected it to be a close battle. However, the end results read Barisan Nasional 21, Perikatan Nasional 2, and Pakatan Harapan 5, out of which DAP won 4, Amanah won 1, and PKR 0. Now, many also predicted that DAP would retain their 8 seats, or at least most of it, but they did not. So what went wrong as a whole at Melaka state elections? What are the lessons that Harapan can take away from it? On the show with me today to answer those questions is YB Howard Lee. He's the youth chief of DAP in Pakatan Harapan, as well as the ADUN for Pasir Pinji. Welcome to the show, Howard. How are you doing?
Good to be back, Dasharan.
Good to have you on the show as always. Now, let's start from the very top. You know, like I said, the end results wasn't what many people were expecting. No, I don't think many analysts predicted, Barisan Nasional 2/3 majority. What is your overall thoughts on the Melaka state election results?
I think there are several key factors. First, I spent pretty much the entire campaign dispelling the myth that DAP would have all 8 of our so-called kubu kuat, or so-called sure win seats, being sure win. From the offset, we've already said that we've got 4 shaky and 4 fairly confident seats, but the notion of a sure win seat no longer exists in the Malaysian political landscape. I spend quite a lot of time trying to dispel that. Despite that, no one would listen. But unfortunately, it became pretty much as we expected. The 4 shaky seats really did get shaken off their seats. But of course, turnout. I mean, I think on the offset, I must make clear, a defeat. It's a defeat regardless of what the reasonings are and what kind of statistical permutations you want to put as an excuse, okay? The defeat is definitely conceded, accepted, on no uncertain terms. But then we must delve deeper into the statistical analyses to inform us to be able to perform better electorally. And of course, the reasoning and the rationales and the emotive triggers either to stay with us or to vote for another corner, all these must also be analyzed and internalized. But I think Tok Mat, the deputy president of UMNO, did kind of put it quite clear. They did predict a reduced in turnout being advantageous to them. And the lower the turnout, the more advantageous it would be in terms of the vote distribution for the seats in which UMNO considers to be their strength. I think that is, I would say, a degree of foresight that is commendable. In which has turned out to be able to garner the victory that UMNO was seeking, to the point that it became a 2/3 majority. I mean, we can harp on about, you know, if the voter turnout was to be higher, they wouldn't be able to get that many seats. But all that is, number one, academic. Number two, it's pointless because it's been and gone. The turnout remained low. Comparative lower, but actually, in comparison to some of the analyses pre-polling day, is actually higher. So I think it's sat at 65.8%, if I'm not mistaken, compared to the 85% in 2018. So it was a significant decrease in turnout. But also, we must look at the where the distribution of turnout as well. So I think all in all, turnout was the key factor. And of course, the narratives out there that became dominant about the UMNO, the two candidates that was fielded by PH, which were arguably kata, arguably defectors, but I mean, factually, they pulled support to the then basically the two UMNO Aduns and one Bersatu and the independent, this cohort of four, two of which were basically frogs. The other two, the official narrative is they just pulled support to their own chief minister and was then subsequently very expediently and very swiftly axed from their party slate as party members. So, I mean, let's not even delve on that because like it or not, the public perception is they were frogs. They did jump. So I think, you know, the leadership, the tactical maneuvers, the strategic positioning taken by Harapan, all these are different contributory factors of which we must learn from that contributed to this defeat. But there are, I don't want to use the term silver lining, but there are some encouraging factors that shows us that the threats may not be necessarily just be upon the rise again or the renaissance of UMNO, but it's also Perikatan Nasional as an equal threat onto the UMNO electoral hegemony that what presents itself to be right now.
DAP didn't just lose four seats. Like DAP, it was eight seats and now there's four, but these four wasn't just a result of 2018, right? Because even after the 2013 elections, DAP had six seats in the Melaka State Legislative Assembly. So this is a sort of a downward or you know, if you look at taking a few steps back, it goes beyond just the 2018 elections. It goes to the 2013 elections and some support that y'all have garnered there seems to have been lost as well. How do you process this information? Where do you think things went wrong? What lessons do you think you can learn from it?
I mean, let's take Bamban, for example. One of the seats that we knew was the most challenging, you know, being, you know, more than 60% Malay vote. And basically, there was also a spoiler that kind of took 850-something votes. So former MCA Adun, which then subsequently claimed to join the party and then came out as a spoiler that took 800 votes. Presumably 800 votes that were supposed to be PH voters. And then, of course, you've got Perikatan Nasional, which did take, I wouldn't say a lot, far from a lion's share, but enough for them to come second place, which relegated the PH candidate in Bamban to third place. And I think it was, it was a typical challenger strength of being untested that came in. And of course, BN was able to mobilize and galvanize their base support. And I think on this, this is not just for Bamban, it's actually across the board. The Melaka state elections this time round was truly a test of a mobilization test for your kind of base vote, either through turnout, but also through you know, whether or not you can hold your base together. But if we were to discuss Bengkalan Batu, on the other hand, actually our candidate, the PH candidate, Danish, actually had a good showing because I think he only lost by 130 votes, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 131.
The numbers are still. Yeah, I mean the numbers are still kind of stuck in the air, and I must apologize. I didn't do too much kind of preparation for this because we're still amidst the kind of delving into the stats to seek patterns. Mm-hmm. But Danish actually did quite well. Three corner fight. The challenger strength that came in was also rather formidable. But again, it wasn't enough. But it wasn't enough for them to win. But it was strong enough for us to not edge over the winning line. But I think the positive things that I think we can take away from, I mean, let's refer Kota Laksmana and Bandahile, I mean, both these seats we won. Mm-hmm. I think it's quite interesting to see that, I mean, Kota Laksmana was kind of, I would say by far, but one of the more encouraging seats where in 2018, we got 81, nearly 82%. In state elections, we got nearly 81%. So it was only a slight reduction, just under 1% reduction in the vote percentage that we got. On the other hand, BN actually suffered a reduction of votes from 16% in 2018 down to 12%. And same again in Bandahile, we had only a slight dip, just under 2% in our vote. But BN, despite two-thirds majority, actually suffered a reduction in somewhat like 4-point-something percent. Mm-hmm. So I think, and both these, you know, I don't want to put it in a racial frame, but both these seats have about 16-17% or early 16% Malay votes. So it was vastly a non-Malay voter constituency. And both these we managed to, if not preserve, despite the fact that there was a 20% reduction in turnout. So I think we had a fairly good showing in mobilizing the existing support, you know, racially or otherwise.
Mm.
So I think another point to show that, you know, actually Barisan Nasional, despite the increased seats, they managed to garner their victory through this, you know, vastly reduced turnout, et cetera, you know, echoing what Tok Mat actually said was, if you were to look at Tanjung Bidara, you know, the hotly contested seat that was, you know, largely seen as a BN versus PN showdown, which it was. It was, you know, it was said to be that, and it turned out to be that. You know, we were hearing that, you know, families were offered firstly 1,000 ringgit, subsequently 2,000 ringgit as a counter offer, and then it ended up being 3,000 ringgit towards the end of the campaign from the now winning corner. You know, Rauf, i.e. the BN vote, actually reduced vastly from 9, there was a 9% reduction from something like a 58% in 2018 to this time around just under 50%. So you're talking about 9% reduction from the general elections to these state general elections, okay, who voted for BN. Of course, there are several other seats, Rim, Serkam, and all these other seats also saw a reduction of BN support. And if you were to juxtapose the DAP or the PH fate, since your question was framed around DAP's performance, I think it was definitely a very, very mixed bag. In the seats that won, we saw increases in comparative increase or at least only a slight decrease in real terms in our base mobilization. But in Duyung, in Bumban, in the seats that we lost, you know, the lessons learned is do not underestimate the power of a gung-ho challenger coming in, which in this particular case took votes away from us and not necessarily the end.
Mm. Now, switching gears to Pakatan Harapan as a whole, hindsight is 2020, Howard. Should Pakatan Harapan have accepted the defectors from UMNO? Because this heading into the elections, people were angry. All over Twitter, people were like, why are y'all doing this? Y'all are supposed
including
to...
Including myself, actually.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I wanted to bring up next. You know, yourself, part of DAP youth, even a lot of Harapan youth members from other parties, whether it's PKR or Amana, a lot of them were very, very unhappy. They spoke out against it. But ultimately, you know, it came, the tone that I got from y'all is more of like resignation and acceptance. Like, okay, this is what the leadership said we should have done. I mean, we are going to do. So, you know, we all fall in line. This is the top leadership's position. We go with it. There is a hierarchy of sorts and you follow your leaders in that sense. Now, you know, when we look back, how much do you think did accepting these defectors sort of play into the ultimate final result? Do you think it demotivated the Harapan base?
I mean, I would like to think that hindsight is 2020. I only wish that that 2020 vision would enable us to make better decisions moving forward. The pair of glasses I'm wearing now are a pair of old ones, and these definitely are not 2020 vision. And I hope that doesn't get repeated hereafter. And I think, yes, base demotivation was a key factor. And it must be said, and I will repeat this time and time again, both my party and internally, myself, within the discussions at the leadership level, was that, really, dude, you want to take like people who are seen as defectors, regardless of what narrative you want to throw at it? I didn't even ask, is this going to work? It was just a straight, outright, I'm not even talking from a moral high ground kind of thing. I was like, do you think this is going to, lose us more than it would gain us? And of course, there were many, arguments, narratives, projections, trajectories that was put on the table. The decision was then made. Despite protest, I think my party made a very clear protest, including myself, including my SecGen, including my entire leadership, of the fact that this is not a wise move. This is not a move that we would support. But nonetheless, in any organization, when there's two against one in the triangle, you either accept it or you withdraw yourself from the partnership. And at that particular juncture, when we asked the question, is this the time? When we asked ourselves, is this the time for us to withdraw from this due to that? The internal answer was no. We even, put this out to some of the grassroots, some of the kind of third, fourth, fifth tier leadership. We even asked some of our members of parliament and our elected officials, is this sufficient for us to withdraw from the larger framework of Pakatan Harapan and the opposition? The answer ultimately was no. So therefore, that came to the conclusion that we have to literally suck it up. Okay? Because number one, we've always worked on collective decision-making. And if the collective decision by majority is not something that we would accept, that we want to accept, in the end, if we vote or elect to stay in the structure, we have to go with it. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm not trying to justify it, but the fact is the decision was made, and I don't want to say rightfully so, but the fact is the results is sufficient as a wake up call and slap on the face for us to not make the same mistake again.
Certainly. Now, you brought up something interesting. Do these kind of discussions happen frequently or sporadically, where component parties, like you can't speak for all the component parties, but let's say on the part of DAP, y'all discuss, is the overall Harapan, what they are going for, is it in line with what DAP is trying to achieve? And if it's not in line, should we then withdraw our partnership? Because after every election, especially when it's a defeat, or let's say people are scrambling for numbers and you don't get the numbers, in these kinds of situations, there will be, the fallout on social media, even among some analysts, they will ask questions like, okay, is this the time for DAP to pull out of Harapan? Would DAP do better if they go at it on their own? The way last time PAS pulled out of Pakatan Rakyat and things like that. So are these kinds of discussions, do they happen either frequently or sporadically within DAP to analyze the situation and see, are we still, in line? Are we still trying to achieve the same thing?
I think, at least from DAP's point of view, our position internally and externally has always been quite clear. We want to. We work on the line, on the strategic line of the united opposition being the only option that would be able to defeat the powers that be. Okay, I think that that is unquestionable. But this discussion of whether or not DAP should withdraw as a result, as a response to this kind of majority decision, didn't really come up at the leadership level per se, because we didn't say that, okay, this is time for us to withdraw because of decision. This actually came from grassroots. And why did it come up? It was like, so if we don't want to accept this, what options do we have? The only option that we have, if we don't discuss, if we don't agree with this, is withdrawal. Not because we wanted it as an option, but it was more of a responsive, it was more of a response to a situation that was between a rock and a hard place. That what options do we have? You want to withdraw. Okay. This came from the ground. And in the end, when that question was asked to the leadership and the leadership asked back, was that, no, of course not. If we withdraw, then the only party that would, or the only parties that would benefit is not ourselves.
Right.
Electorally, and by virtue of that, if you allow for a clean sweep with this strategic line of withdrawal by PN and or BN, then who's at the disadvantage here? It's the electorate, it's the Malaysian political landscape, it's democracy as a whole in Malaysia, right? So it wasn't really that we have A option of staying, we have B option of withdraw. Which one do you want? No, it wasn't that. It was the situation that dictated that we asked the tough question of what the alternative would be. And the only alternative that came was, do we want to withdraw? And it was a very swift answer of no. No, we don't want to withdraw. We can't withdraw for the sake of the party, for the united opposition, for the people, etc., etc. So I think post results, post 20th, when the two-thirds majority by BN came about, then that narrative from the ground escalated into a challenge of a change of leadership. But even that, it wasn't, I mean, I would say if you want to give it a you know, you got the challenge of leadership, challenge to change leadership versus a withdrawal, it's very much so a kind of like 80 to 90% challenge to change leadership, meaning that people still value the vehicle that is PH, versus, and this is both internally within the party as well as our supporters, versus the let's just withdraw altogether.
Right.
Okay. It's kind of like a 20-80 or a 90-10 split, 80 to 90 to keep the vehicle with a change of leadership versus a withdrawal. So I think the withdrawal narrative and withdrawal suggestion per se is still very much in the minority, is still very much so a fringe call. But again, let's not underestimate fringe calls and minority calls, because minority calls quite often can find themselves turning majority.
On the show with me today is YB Howard Lee, Youth Chief of DAP and Pakatan Harapan, as well as the ADUN for Pasir Pinji. After the break, I'll be asking him about preparations for the Sarawak state elections. We'll be back with more on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is YB Howard Lee, Youth Chief of DAP and Pakatan Harapan, as well as the ADUN for Pasir Pinji. And we're discussing the results of the Melaka state elections that took place last Saturday and what it could mean for Harapan moving forward. Now, after the Pakatan Harapan's defeat at the Melaka state elections, DAP Melaka Chief, he stepped down and he said that I'm taking responsibility for this. On that similar note, many have also called for Harapan's top leadership to consider taking similar steps, not to leave the political arena altogether, but sort of take a step back from the active leadership roles. Of course, the most prominent calls were from Harapan's top leader, Anwar Ibrahim, the leader to step down. The calls for Anwar Ibrahim to step down have been growing over the past 1 year or so. But not just Anwar. You know, you have other people who have said that similarly, the likes of perhaps Lim Guan Eng, you know, should step down as well because, you know, he just has too much baggage, and it's because of some of the oldies at DAP, if we can call it that. You know, it's even more difficult for DAP to penetrate the Malay heartland, that they are too much of a boogeyman figures, whether it's their fault or not. It's just how the narrative goes. What are your thoughts on that? How big of a role do you think Harapan's top leadership played in Harapan's defeat in Melaka? And should there be a change of leadership, either from, you know, Anwar Ibrahim himself or from DAP, from Amana? Let's just go with Harapan's top leadership structure as a whole.
Let me first address Kokyu's, Teh Kokyu, the Malacca State Chairman for DAP, mm-hmm. And his resignation. I think it's an honourable move that he took. You know, at the end of the day, that is a decision that has to be dealt with and faced by DAP Malacca. And I think discussions are being had internally within the State Committee of DAP Malacca. And of course, DAP is a heavily decentralized party when it comes to state leadership and state decisions, and state electoral decisions. Actually, were very decentralized, and the central leadership will almost always respect and adhere to state decisions. So I think that's for DAP Malacca to deal with. Nonetheless, I think I would applaud the honorable move to take responsibility. And then the discussion, if was to be transposed to the national level, whenever one speaks of a change of leadership, the word change is key, right? It is a two-part thing. It's the removal and the replacement. And if one does not or has yet to identify or reach a, I don't even want to say a consensus, or reach a trajectory of what that path from removal to replacement, if that path has not been discussed, decided, spelt out, tested in argument, I think it would be very irresponsible for us to just say that, yeah, you step down. And it would also be irresponsible for those who've been asked to step down without this transition, right? Because you like it or not, the sound on the ground and the narrative indicators, especially amongst our supporters, is not an outright discounting of Harapan as a vehicle. You know, we did get elected, albeit being 5 seats, but we did get a significant, you know, 35-36% of the votes. So the fact is, there is still definitely, I would even say, a high degree of support and trust towards Harapan as a vehicle. And let's say, for example, we were to make this move of, you know, very expediently just kind of remove the leaders without that transition and replacement in place, I think, you know, we would be attacked and we would be hit and we would be blamed for even more so than just the defeat. After defeat, you don't yet have, you have a leadership step down without a leadership, a new leadership taking the mantle. I think, you know, we can't afford to do that. If, and I put a big if to that, if there was to be a change, and, you know, as part of Majlis President, I'm not really at liberty to give my personal opinion. It would be improper to give my personal opinion as part of the structure.
Right.
I think if we were to do that, we will be punished. And I think the next step, some of the key tough elephants in the room, tough discussions that must be had in the coming Majlis President Presidential Council meetings of PH, these are amongst the issues that must be addressed swiftly and ironed out as swiftly as possible. And I give you my commitment as part of the Presidential Council. I will push for these elephants in the room to be addressed.
We've got a few minutes left, so I want to squeeze in a question about Sarawak election and perhaps just general elections, upcoming general elections. So Sarawak is an important battleground for Harapan, but particularly among the Harapan component parties, it's an important battleground for DAP. But at the same time, it's a very, very strong hold of GPS and Abang Joe. How confident are you that you can retain your seats and perhaps even win more?
I think we, at least the party, will approach the state, the Sarawak state general elections with a large measure of caution and a large measure of humility and an even larger measure of hard work. Because I think we are very, very aware that the campaign that we are accustomed to no longer is an option. And we suffered greatly in Melaka. Okay. The momentum building, tactical working line that we're so used to, drama, et cetera, that's no longer an option. And we do know that what is an option out, what are options out there are in huge advantage to those who are in power, who has resources, who have resources and power to deploy. And they are not, they are unashamedly ready to deploy regardless, or all power and resources, regardless whether it's legal or not. Let's make that clear. I think it would be difficult for us to make projections of whether or not we'll be able to gain more seats, but there is a certain degree of confidence that we'll be able to preserve the seats that we have. And I can only speak on behalf of DAP, Sarawak, and even that, I don't really have the locus because, as I said before, DAP is an extremely decentralized party where states, especially Sabah and Sarawak, has a lot of autonomy in how they conduct their electoral battles. But that, for me, is something that is very immediate. And I think a strategy, I don't want to plug Donald Trump, but the strategy when voiced out overtly is no longer a strategy. So I think we trust in the wisdom of the national leadership and especially the state leadership of DAP Sarawak to take their course of actions accordingly. And I think the last point that you mentioned was the general elections. I think I was in a discussion or a debate per se with Ashraf Wajadi's last night. When the question was posed to him about, UMNO's claim or UMNO's press for a general election the soonest of time was apparently just a suggestion,
right?
According to Ashraf Lah. But regardless of whether it's a suggestion or is it a press, is it a hard press, is it an elbow press, or is it a punch, we don't care. The call is there. And my question to that, and I'm not trying to play politics here, I'm not trying to dig on semantics, but is this UMNO's way of trying to, or is this UMNO's runaway tactic from the MOU that we have painstakingly negotiated and signed? Are they trying to run away from the anti-hopping law, the recall election, Undi 18? Are they trying to run away with these arguments of chicken and egg? You need to have a strong, stable government before you can carry out these reform agendas. Is UMNO trying to ride on this wave of seemingly newfound or refound support to run away from the reform agendas that they had agreed to in the MOU? The MOU states or has been agreed upon to at least not to dissolve the federal government until July. And there are many, many things that some have been delivered, a lot have not, including what I mentioned before, the Lapamblas, anti-hopping law, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not trying to run away with that. I think that is a question for the electorate to answer and to use as a basis for their decision if and when it comes to it, whether it's in January, February, March, April, or in 2023.
Right. Just one last question, Howard. Now, early reports by some analysts have indicated that Harapan has lost ground among just by the Melaka state election results post-mortem. The Harapan has lost ground amongst younger voters, particularly younger Malay voters who voted for Perikatan Nasional. As Harapan's youth chief, what do you think you and the coalition should do better to attract these younger voters across racial lines?
Since this is the last question and there's not much time, I think we should jazz it up.
Okay.
I think we should really jazz it up. And I think there is praise to be given, or at least there is a one of the strategic lines taken by that is quite commendable, is they were willing to basically go crazy and just do things completely out of their comfort zone, completely out of their norms, and they have really embraced their new norms, you know, really challenging the status quo by putting unknown candidates. We know the reasons why there were unknown candidates, because Ra'ulf was making a power play. Ra'ulf was basically trying to replace those who are not his loyalists with his loyalists who are young, who are moldable, so that he could control them if and when it came to it. Okay, but nonetheless, they managed to make some rather commendable, I would say, disruptions, as in going into an election that they didn't know they were going to win. Even by projections, they were going to win very thinly. And I think it's time that Harapan move away from these kind of traditional, classic Malaysian political dynamics and just be a challenger. We managed to gain ground in 2000, post 2004, in 2006 and 2007, we made some drastic changes within the party structure and the party dynamics and even the party strategic working line, which brought about the 2008 monumental and colossal gains. And I think Harapan as a whole needs to be able to embrace that spirit of disruption. And, you know, what these disruptions should look like and can be and ought to be, we don't have enough time to discuss, and it's something that we can discuss in another show. But I think disruption is what we need internally. I think daringness and courage is what we need. And do or die attitude is what we need right now.
On that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Howard.
Thank you. Pleasure as always.
That was YB Howard Lee, Youth Chief of BAP and Pakatan Harapan, as well as the ADUN for Pasir Pinji. If you missed any part of the conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.